Welcome back, everyone, to the Writer's Parachute, where we're guiding author and writer dreams to a perfect landing. We have with us today another very special guest. He's a children's author, optometrist, father, and a frame and jewelry designer. We're going to talk to him in a minute about several of his books, specifically Geraldine and the Anti-Bullying Shield. But of course, we always start out with a housekeeping. We would love for you to go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Go ahead and hit the like button and share. Don't forget the bell so that you get reminders when new episodes are out every single week. If you would like to be notified directly to your email inbox, please go to sendfox.com/thewritersparachute and you can sign up for our weekly newsletter with updates on every episode into your inbox directly. Of course, you can go ahead and follow us on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, which is now X, Threads, and TikTok at Writer Parachute. That is Writer Parachute without an S. Of course, if you would love to reach out to the Writer's Parachute, you can reach us through the website at info@thewritersparachute.com. And we love listening to you. So, of course, we want to go ahead and get started here. Our topic of the week here on season two, we have been focused on reviews. Reviews are the lifeblood. They are the critical mass that authors need to get their books out into the world. This is how we're seen. This is how we're recognized. This is how our books are graded, judged, or whatever else you want to say about it. This is how the writer, the author, gets feedback about their books and the information contained in them. So next time that you read a book, go ahead and leave a review. But we're going to talk today about maybe some of the failures with reviews. I've talked to so many authors over the years. They have tried just about everything in the world to get people, remind people to write reviews. One of the few things that someone could do for an author that costs them nothing, there are options where if you have purchased at least $50 in the last 12 months on Amazon, you can review any book on Amazon and as long as you're following their community guidelines. Also, you can go to goodreads.com and leave a review for a book. Also, a lot of the other retailers do not have as strict of review guidelines as Amazon, so you can often leave those there. Don't forget, in this day and age, we walk around with a computer in our hand. If you would like to do a audio or video recording of your review, you can certainly do that and post those also on Amazon, Goodreads, and most retailers. If you are concerned that you are not following the guidelines, then please go to Community Standards and Guidelines on any of the retailers' websites, and they will explain fully to you exactly what their guidelines are revolving around reviews of books and products. So I encourage you to do that. So we talked to Saul a little bit here in the green room, and he said that, he's been having a difficult time with people following through on reviews. People will often offer their books in an ebook format or something like this. It's free in exchange for reviews. This is often what we mean when we say, hey, my book is free on Kindle or one of the other ebook platforms. However, given that, what happens is you'll get a bunch of people and go and freely download your book and they'll read your book, but they don't leave reviews. So we're going to ask nicely, and we're going to remind you nicely until it's time to not be nice. Right now, I'm getting a little close to that edge of not being nice. If you are given a free book by an author, they are asking you to leave them a review. Now, I understand that not everybody's good at reviews, and they're not complicated. A review can be something as simple as, I liked this book, I didn't like this book, I recommend this book for this age group or this person or someone interested in this particular topic. It could be that simple, or it could be as complex and in detail as you would like. So if you're concerned about how to write a review, all we're asking for is your opinion of the book and or the story. So make sure next time you pick up a book, next time you read one, and especially if you get a free copy of a book, to go back to the retailer where you received the free book and leave a review. If you cannot recall the retailer, then please go to Goodreads and leave a review for the author. They will thank you so much. As I said, this is one of the few ways that they get a feedback or response from the readers. Now I'm going to pull Saul in for just a moment because he has some other thoughts about getting people to follow through on their reviews and get those reviews out to the readers and to the audience through the author website and through their purchase page on Amazon. So go ahead, Saul, what have you got to say about this?
Well, first of all, I'm very, very excited to be here. This is, I think, my second time doing this. We did this over a year ago or 2 years ago, I think. It's been a while.
It's been a while, yes.
Really, really excited to do this. I've been waiting for this podcast, and today is the day that I'm finally on. So thank you for bringing me on. My wife kept telling me that I have a mean resting face. I've been looking at the screen here. I don't have a mean resting face, do I? I mean,
no.
I've been listening to this here. I mean, so at least I got to learn something here.
There you go.
What were we talking about? No, I'm just kidding.
Where
so
are we?
About reviews. Okay, this is the thing. I have, like, as Donna said, I'm an optometrist, and I have been practicing for 23 years. And we thrive, my private practice, on reviews, whether it's Google or Yelp or whatever. That's basically the bread and butter of our business. Getting author reviews through my books is the same thing as getting patient reviews. They always tell you, oh my God, this is great, I love it, I'm going to give you a review, and 90% you're not getting a review. It's just to make you happy for that instant, and that's about it. But 10% will give you a review, but it's not enough. So the problem here is, I understand that they get free books on Amazon, we gift it to them, they can download it on their Kindle and all that. And then once they're done with it, they just move on. They forget they have to give a review, or they have nothing good to say and they'd rather not give a review, or they're just lazy. It's got to be one of the three. So what I found here is that maybe by giving them some incentive, mm-hmm. We'll get the ball rolling. So in my practice, I'll give them, let's say, if you write a review, you'll get 20% off your next purchase, or you'll get a free this, or a cleaning cloth with a cleaning kit, or with a case, or whatever. We do that. We're not giving money away. We're giving some discounts, some goodies, stuff that, mm-hmm. It's worth their while. Same thing with the books. What do I do with the books? So first off, I've started this Facebook group, and we have over 30,000 members in there. These are all authors and illustrators. And we tried, I know that you're not supposed to swap reviews and all that, but we tried maybe two a month, three a month. It's kind of under the radar. It's just one or two reviews a month or something like that. Even with that, it was impossible. Mm-hmm. I ended up basically giving reviews after review and not getting anything back. So that didn't work. Authors are not good at giving reviews to other authors. That's what I find. Unless, I don't know, you buy their book or you talk to them for a while. I cannot talk to hundreds of authors. I have a job, I have kids. It's hard to get chummy with them to get a review. So what the best thing to do is, when I go and do my school visits or when I do my book readings, I give them goodies for a review before they actually, purchase the book or before they read the book, not after.
Right.
So when we had the pandemic, I even designed these face masks with Geraldine, which is the main character of my book, and all her friends on this face mask. And it cost me about $8 to make this each. And I would just hand them out to, please give me a review and, all that. And that actually helped. But that was when the pandemic happened. Mm-hmm. Post-pandemic, it just went down again because people were not wearing face masks anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would give them pins and stickers and, autographed, pictures of original pictures of Geraldine. I mean, copies of that. Or puzzles, or word searches, coloring, whatever you can think of, pencils, cups. And that would just draw very few reviews as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you get them in the beginning a lot, and then it just fizzles out. So that's what I found. found with reviews.
Right. And I'm going to answer a few of those things that you're bringing up. So number one, as he does with his business, of course, on those reviews, you can give things after as an incentive. You cannot do that with books. Amazon does not allow that, and most retailers do not allow that. You have to give it to them in advance, whether or not they leave your review or not. But on the other side, what he spoke about is about authors are not good about leaving reviews, which I find fascinating because the more you review books, the more likely the readers of those books are going to look to you for good recommendations. And then when they realize you're also an author, they're going to be a devoted fan because you speak to something that they need to know about. So, any authors out there that are listening that don't write reviews, number one, shame on you. Number two, you're missing a very vital way to connect with your audience in a new and unique way. So do go leave those reviews. And also, number three, you're setting an example for your fans. If they see you leaving reviews, and there is nothing more attractive to a new author than an author who leaves reviews of books, because they want to get on your list. They want to be reviewed by you. And for those readers out there who are listening, same thing applies. Authors are very attracted to people who regularly leave reviews. If you go on Goodreads, you go on Amazon, and you see somebody who regularly leaves reviews, especially in a particular genre, trust me, those authors are going to start reaching out to you, going, "Would you love a free copy of my book for a review? How about I send you a t-shirt with that free book?" And so reviews are cyclical. You have to be able to give to get. And thirdly, I think part of the reason that most readers forget, or not necessarily forget, but just don't do it, is because they feel like it's a complicated process. Most of the time, if you purchased a book, if you're reading it through your Kindle app or something like that, it will take you directly back. Usually at the end of the book, you can go directly back and leave a review. If not, you can go to your Amazon account and look at your orders, especially your digital orders. Go back to the receipt and it has a write a review button there. If that doesn't work for you, then you can always go back to where you purchased the book. Just look up the book listing by its title or author name, and you can leave a review there as well. And here's the thing, if you can't figure it out, I guarantee you can reach out to that author and say, "Hey, I wrote this review. I just couldn't figure out how to put it up there for you." They will love you for it, and they will find a home for it for you. So don't hesitate, leave a review, good, bad, or indifferent. As he said, some people think, "Well, I didn't particularly like the book. I don't want to leave a review." I'm going to say something about that right now. When I go to buy books or when I go to buy anything, I look at the good reviews and I look at the bad reviews and I look at the in-between reviews, because sometimes the bad reviews tell me something important so that I can make a decision whether that bothers me or not, whether that interests me or not. And sometimes that's more valuable than all the glowing reports and reviews in the world. So don't hesitate if you feel like there's something that needed to be pointed out or something that needed to be mentioned. On the other side of that, there's no need to be vicious or cruel when you're leaving a review. There's always a nice way to say it. So I don't want to get too deep in the weeds with this. As I said, we've been focusing entire season two here on reviews. If there's any more information that you would like to know about reviews, please reach out to us at info@thewritersparachute.com, or you can leave us a comment in the comment section wherever you're listening or watching the podcast episode. Also, go back and check all the episodes for season two. Trust me, we covered a lot of topics about reviews, about getting reviews, what to do with reviews, the different kinds of reviews, all of that for you in this season two. So let's go ahead and get on with the show. Of course, we want to welcome Saul. It's Saul Regwan. We are talking to him. He's an award-winning children's author, a father, optometrist, and frame and jewelry designer. We're going to be talking to him about book three from his Gizmo Girl series, Geraldine and the Anti-Bullying Shield. Book one is Geraldine and the Most Spectacular Science Project. Book two is Geraldine and the Space Bees. Book four is Geraldine and the Rainbow Machine. He also has a Gizmo Girl full four book collection available on Amazon. He also has a book out called Dylan and His Magical Robot. He has The Adventures of Pugly Bear and his newest book, which we're going to talk to him about next time when he comes back. He's going to show you those covers in just a second. I Could Be Josephine and the Steam Toddler Dreamers, which is a board book. Saul Riguan is the author of the Gizmo Girl series, featuring a feisty second grader named Geraldine, and has authored two other successful children's books. He has been featured on the cover of Story Monsters, Inc. magazine and was a finalist for the Forward Indie Award. Each of his stories teaches children a valuable lesson or moral. You can find him on Instagram at Saul Riguan. Riguan, I am saying that right, author. So, welcome to the Writer's Parachute, Saul. How are you today?
I am great. Absolutely great. Wow, what an introduction.
Oh, my God. You're very welcome. I could have said it better myself.
Amazing. Really cool introduction.
Well, you and I have known each other for a while. We've passed books back and forth. We've done reviews for each, you know, for each other's books. And, you know, I just love your Gizmo Girl series. I love Geraldine. She is such a precocious little second grader, and some of the ideas she comes up with, I often stop and think, I wonder what he was thinking when he decided to write this book. So it always gives me pause, and I really do like it. So this third book in the series of four is Geraldine and the Anti-Bullying Shield, which I have it here behind me, and it focuses on bullying and teamwork. And I know why, but I want to hear what you have to say about why these are important topics to talk to children about.
Well, it's funny. So like Donna said, there are four Gizmo Girl books in the series, and I do a lot of school readings, and I go to, you know, first grade, second grade, up to fifth grade. 90% of the time, I always give them a choice, and I introduce the four books, and I ask them, which of these four would you like me to read to you? Because I read it in their class or in their library. 90% will choose this one, which is Geraldine and the Anti-Bullying Shield. And at first, I didn't understand, what is it about this book? What about the other ones are really, you know, they're very adventurous, but they love this book. And there is a huge, huge bullying problem until now. It's always been there and still goes on today. And I think it's getting even more prevalent now. There's a lot of bullying problems in schools, especially middle schools, elementary schools. I mean, there's a lot of bullying. My kids, I have three little kids, all in elementary school. There hasn't been one kid from the three that has not gone through some sort of a bullying incident. So so they can relate to this. It's a very, very, very needed topic of how we can prevent this, what we could do to teach our kids. The first thing I did was I signed up all my kids in karate. That's the first thing I did. And I wanted them, in the beginning, they were excited. And then once they got their yellow belt, which is the second degree after the white belt, they said, okay, that's enough then. I said, no, no, you're going all the way. So I had to push them because I don't know what's going to happen in middle school or high school. You know, you hear all these stories, and I want them to be armed and prepared, you know, not just about fighting or self-defense. It's also a mental thing here too. Karate gives them that edge, that strength and that discipline that they need. So I'm so for that. But I wrote this book because my kids being in elementary school and all going through bullying stuff like that, and I kept hearing stories, and it would just turn my insides upside down when I heard these things. You just want to strangle these kids that do this to your kids. So I wrote this book, but I wanted to do something. Geraldine basically is a character that thinks outside the box. So this was something, and every book she has, and she creates some sort of a solution through her gadgets and gizmos. So I was thinking, how can I solve a bullying problem in her school and have it work through her gadgets and gizmos? This was not easy to write, but I came up with the idea. My mom, basically, when I was a kid, told me, and when I would act up, I would go crazy or hyper or ADD or whatever. She'd say, just look in the mirror, look at yourself for 1 second, look how you're behaving. And then if you take a second, let's say you're raged and you're acting, you're just going crazy and you're hyper, and you take a good look in the mirror for just 2 seconds, something happens there, something clicks. You know something's not right. That's how I got the idea for the anti-bullying shield. So this book over here had a lot of components of my childhood, and thinking outside the box and STEM. It's all STEM related. So you have to incorporate all that together, and that's how I came out with this book. And this is the most read book for me when I go to schools.
And I do love that, and it's like, and what I do love about this book is because you use the reflection of the bully. I'm trying not to give away the whole story, but you're using the reflection of the bully to let them teach themselves the lesson of what it is they're doing. And I think, I find that a lot of times in going to schools and seeing this bullying activity, a lot of it is a replication or a duplication of either an older sibling or a family member that is acting inappropriately, and they're replicating that behavior, not understanding what is going on. And oftentimes, I've gone into schools and talked to them, and I do this one talk about, are you the bully? And because we talk about different things about what kids don't often consider bullying, like when they're excluding somebody, when a new student comes into a class and they don't welcome them, that's a form of bullying. When they won't let them sit with them in, in the cafeteria or play with them on the playground, those are forms of bullying. And the ones we normally identify are more escalated forms of bullying, but I think we have to look at the root of it. And again, I think you're right. If they see themselves behaving that way, I think it teaches them the lesson faster and deeper than all of the words and activities that we could do otherwise. And I think that was the brilliant part of your book. This Gizmo Girl series does introduce STEM and STEAM subjects. Those are specifically science, art, engineering, technology, with a little bit of math thrown in. Don't want to scare the people away, but there is a little bit of math thrown in. But that's kind of the Gizmo Girl series, is Geraldine is kind of an inventor. Again, she's thinking outside the box. So I want to know what kind of, or why do we think that these kind of critical subjects are going to be shaping the world in the future, and why it's so important that we include them in children's books.
Well, I mean, it starts at an early age. Whenever you hear stories of, well, this is a whole different subject, but when you hear about transgendered in schools, and if a parent know have has a right to know, is it a good thing for a parent to know? Is it a dangerous thing if a parent knows? Maybe the kid becomes more depressed or suicidal, or so you hear all this, and it's starting at a very, very young age. I mean, I used to think probably in junior high or high, not anymore. It happens in elementary schools. It happens in third grade, fourth grade. So you got to start now. And third graders or second graders, they read books, or they're exposed to books through school. So these topics, I wrote the Pugly Bear, Home Sweet Home. That's my first book. That's a cookie cutter, cute little bear that ran away from home. They don't read that anymore. It's got to be now. Things that are very, very that something that affects their life, something social, environmental, anything that affects them that they want to know about. So this is why I'm gearing towards, my fourth book is Geraldine and the Rainbow Machine, and that has to do with diversity and kindness. We need a lot more kindness in this world today. And if we start with our young ones, hopefully we start, spreading the seeds from then, and having them, grow and pass it on, versus I think it's too late to spread this to someone in high school, or we got to start younger. That's
Right.
the thing. So
And I agree with you. And I think part of it is that they're exposed to more things than we were at our, at that young age. But also, If you think about it, usually when they hit about second, third, or fourth grade is when they're figuring out that they are separate from their parents and their siblings. They are a separate entity and they have to figure out who that person is going to be. Are they going to be a nice person? Are they going to be an aggressive person? Or are they going to be studious? Or are they going to be, more of an athlete? Those sorts of decisions are crossing their mind on an hourly, daily basis. And so a lot of these topics and subjects do come up. And a lot of times it's just in a question or a quest for information. And I do like that you are bringing forward the science, the art, the engineering, the technology, and the math, because these are critical to everyone going forward. It's like there is no part of our lives that STEAM doesn't affect. We're all using computers, which, what is that? Science, technology, math, little bit of art because it's all visual, and we also have some engineering because then you got to figure out how to work everything and how to make it work. So all of those things are involved in our daily lives as they were not before. And I think it's important to not only give them introductions to those things, but as you're doing with your series, you're giving them usable ideas for those topics and those subjects, how to pull them together, as with Geraldine in this particular book, where she sees a problem, she applies her skills in STEAM to create a solution, to invent something to solve the problem, which again, problem solving is an important task for kids of this age. So now the
Absolutely.
main character, we talked about her a little bit, is Geraldine, and she's kind of a precocious, as I said, second grader. I want to know who inspired you to create Geraldine.
So Geraldine did not start out, when I wrote Geraldine, it didn't start off as a second grader. It actually started off as a penguin.
Oh.
When I had my, you know, my when my kids were, I think, 2 years old or 3 years old, something like that, I went into a clothing store. I was going to buy them something, you know, to wear. It was some kid's birthday we were going to go to. I walked in there, and the entire store, it was like a boutique, was black and white. So they either sold white shirts or black pants, or there was no blue, or it was just a black and white boutique. And all the way in the very top, I see this little doll of a penguin that's also in black and white. I felt like I walked into a scene of I don't know, Bonanza when it was in black and white. It was just all from the 50s. I saw that penguin. The first thing I did was I looked at that penguin and I said, "That's Geraldine." I don't know what, and I never ever in my life met a Geraldine. I never came across a Geraldine. I don't know how Geraldine came up, but I looked at the penguin and that was the name. And I asked the owner there, "Can I please buy this penguin?" And she said, "No, this is just for decoration. We don't sell this." And after a lot of persuasion and money, she actually let me. And I went right. I went home. Right, I didn't buy the clothes, by the way. I went home and I wrote as much as I could, and I wrote an entire story about this penguin who's such a troublemaker, and that the penguin's parents sent him to boarding school in Switzerland. And I said, "I'm going to edit this, and I'm going to submit it to the publisher." And I did, and I got tons of just rejections all over the place. Rejections. And after so many rejections, I finally decided maybe it shouldn't be a penguin. I'm going to change it into what my daughter is. I got inspired by my daughter, her name is Olivia. And it's funny, and Olivia's in second grade. So I wrote it after her. I made it into a second grade student who's a leader, and she's feisty, and she likes to invent things. She's a scientist, all that stuff. And then it clicked because the STEM and the STEAM thing, I could link it with that. And my publisher, Schiffer Kids Publishing, loved that concept. And right away, I signed a 4-book deal with them, and that was just amazing. So I got inspired first by a boutique that I saw a doll, a stuffed animal, and then by my daughter, Olivia. I actually wanted to change the name to Olivia when I went, but then there's that famous pig book, Olivia, that do that. So I just kept it at Geraldine, and I'm so happy I left it at Geraldine, because after writing this book, I get tons of women by the name of Geraldine writing me, "Oh my God, I can't believe there's finally my name's in print," because Now I know about 30 Geraldines. I know
There you
Geraldines. That's crazy. I didn't even know one.
Connecting the world through Geraldines. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So in the series, Geraldine invents solutions for her classmates. So I want to know how kids can connect with that message. What is it that you want them to take from Geraldine being able to solve the problem?
Well, kids like to also be entertained. Geraldine's very, very entertaining. She does things in a funny way. She speaks their language. She's not doesn't watch what she says. You know, if something comes to her mind, she'll just, you know, shout it out. Sometimes not the best way. The teacher kind of tells her to relax a little bit, but she, you know, she when she gets excited and she has an idea, it just comes out. So she's not shy. Kids can gravitate. They really relate to her. And the way she solves, because every book has a problem and there's a solution, and the way she solves it is not something that you would normally think of. You know, with bullying, let's say, you know, I used to think the best thing to do is just teach my kids how to fight, and then if someone's touching them or hitting them, hit them back until they, you know, they give up, and then they're not, there's not gonna be any bullying. That's not the way to do this anymore. You got to think outside the box. You got to be smarter than them. You got to, you know, be ahead, all that. So that's the kids when they see that they see that. Sorry, they
That's
see
all right.
that how is she going to get out of this problem? That's what keeps their minds pretty
Right.
curious. They want to know. Yeah.
Right. Well, and I like the idea because what Geraldine does in effect in all these books is she's teaching them that even though they're only second graders and they're only at this, 7 or 8 year olds, they still have the ability, they have the reasoning skills to make a difference. And that's what I do love about the books. It is teaching them that, all is not lost. They don't need to go to the adults, they don't need to go to the teachers. They have the ability to solve their own problems, which I think is so valuable. And especially for kids in their growth, it's like once they realize they have the skills and the tools to solve problems, then they flourish. They aren't dependent upon other people to solve their problems for them, which I so appreciate. So I know that you've written so many books here, so I know this is going to be an interesting answer. So I want to know what has been the biggest obstacle or challenge that you've met in writing your books or the book series, and of those, what was the one that surprised you the most?
So let's see, getting back to Geraldine, actually, the biggest obstacle right now in writing a book, in writing children's books, is what I'm going through right now, actually. So I'm writing I don't think it hasn't been done to this degree, but I'm actually writing a children's book on the Holocaust. And it's going to be called Yellow Stars. And it is the toughest book I've ever had to write in my entire life. It is tough. Try to explain the Holocaust to a 6-year-old or a 7-year-old. It's not easy. But it's necessary. You know, it's very necessary to, because I try to research this. There isn't a single children's book on the Holocaust. There's maybe, you know, there's Anne Frank. There's a character that was in the Holocaust that you know, you'll hear about their story, but not the actual event, what happened, the history of it, all that to a child. So that's an obstacle by itself, and you have to be also politically correct, and you cannot cause nightmares for kids, you know, because you don't want, you know, parents are not gonna, you know, read them this book, but you want to educate them. So that's a huge obstacle by itself. With Geraldine, the obstacle that I had is you're always trying to up one. So every book that I come up with, the problem is easy. The problem is a cake. There's so many problems. But the solution to a 7-year-old or 6-year-old outside the box that they can relate, that they can do at home, that's the challenge right there. So the solution is tough. I always have the problem, but the solution takes a while for me to do that. And it has to be solved with whatever they have in their house. I don't want them to go and buy stuff. It's everything that you have in your house that you can go ahead and solve a major problem, whether it's environmental, social, anything.
Yeah, I know. I remember when we talked about your first book, and Geraldine took apart a toaster and a pair of glasses. And I'm thinking, you know, he's like, I would not want to be the mother that comes in and finds her toaster and her glasses taken apart. But you know, you do love the story because she is ingenious and inventive, and you know, and also recycling. So I do love that about her, and I think that that's. You know, that is the tipping point for great children's books is figuring out that the books need to speak to the children. They don't need to
Right.
speak to the adults who may be reading them to children. They need to speak to the children directly. And I think this is part of what you're struggling with this new book is how do you relate that information that a child is going to understand? And this is where I think there's a sometimes a disconnect where people think that children's books are easy because they're simple ideas. And I try to correct them. I'm like, no, they're complicated ideas simplified, which is an entirely different thing and a much, much harder to do. So I wish you the best of luck in going forward with that. So if you could talk to your younger self and go all the way back before you started this journey, what advice do you think you would give yourself today?
I wish I started this earlier because I absolutely love writing. It was I guess I discovered writing at age 44, and I always thought that, oh my God, I'm probably too old to write children's books at 44. Who writes, you know? Totally not the case. It's because my kids, I was inspired, and you get ideas, and it's something that's in you, inside you, that something brings it out. And in my case, it was me reading my kids' books every single night, two, three books a night, 7 days a week, and you get these ideas. So I tell my younger self to basically like these topics that I wish I had these topics a little bit sooner than what I wrote now, so I'd be a little bit ahead of my time. But you know, I'm glad I started it, and I see that, you know, that I love doing this, and that's what keeps me going. So I would just tell myself, you know, why didn't you start younger? Why did you wait till 44? But that's about it.
Well, yeah, I know. We all have that conversation with ourselves. But on the other side, conversely, you know, sometimes that maturity has to develop before you can kind of separate the forest from the trees and see the actual solution to the problem. So, you know, that's, you know, but at any age, writing is a wonderful journey. I didn't publish my first book until I was in my 50s, even though I've been writing since I was like 4 or 5 years old. You know, but I just, you know, it wasn't that I had a problem writing or coming up with the ideas. I just never thought anybody cared to read it. So,
Oh,
you
you
know.
got books. I've read your books. Your books are great.
Thank
Yeah,
you. I appreciate
absolutely. That's a
that.
whole show by itself right there.
Thank you. Well, I love doing it, and as like I said, I have no problem with my imagination. It kind of goes bananas, and people ask me how I come up with the crazy ideas, and it's like, well, it just happened that way. You know, it's like create a character and let them run wild. You know, so that's kind of the way I approach it. So I want to know what it is that you wish that you had known, or that somebody had told you or shared with you before you started.
So I went through all these trials and tribulations with basically finding out what's the best way for me to get my books out. And I started with hybrid publishing, which was a big mistake. But it was a learning experience, you know, a lot of money shelled out, not return on that. And then I went to self-publishing, which was money-wise, that was great, but it wasn't what I was looking for as far as quality of the book and distribution and all that. I had to do a lot of the stuff by myself. And then when I got to traditional publishing, which is what I'm doing now, it's a small, I'm very, very happy with Schiffer Publishing. I mean, I've been with them for years, and they're the ones that publish all the Geraldine books. And they help out with distribution and all that. And so that's great. So I wish I just went straight to traditional publishing and bypassed the other two. But it took me the other two to learn what works and what doesn't work. So, I mean, I can't be upset with that. And that leads me to try to, you know, I'm looking now for an agent, a literary agent, to kind of help me, you know, with getting to the top five, the top publishers like Simon & Schuster and Random House and Penguin and all that, that you have to have an agent for that. And that's a whole world by itself. Not easy, but it takes time and perseverance to do that. So yeah, I wish I bypass a lot of the stuff that I know now. I mean, I know so much now about the publishing. It's not about, I used to think it's if you it's about the art and writing. It's great, but it's not about that. It's about how many books can you sell. The publishers look at that, agents look at that. It's all about the money and how much potential does this have for a second book in the series, and could this be made into a movie? Can how much more? I mean, merchandise and all that stuff. It's about how much money can you make with your book. And it kind of takes away the art and the love of of writing and all that. And I'm spending now most of my time marketing and publicizing the books and all that, and less writing, which I wish was the opposite. That's why I want an agent. Once you're in the big five, even though you do have to promote, you don't have to promote as much as if you're not with them. And then you can continue with your writing, and it could be a career. You could just write, and you just, the advances come, and then hopefully, you could just focus on the art and then let them worry about the marketing.
Well, I have a follow-up question to that because I find that a lot of times you kind of have to go through these smaller presses and the self-publishing and the hybrid publishing to build up your own catalog of books, good, bad, somewhere in there, to be able to even be attractive to one of the top five or to one of the literary agents. Because I hear this a lot of times with new authors, especially with children's books. And they're like, well, I've been querying my children's book. It's great. Everybody says it's amazing. And I can't find an agent. I can't find a publisher. And I'm like, well, how about if you write three books and go back and see if you get them to buy it? Because a lot of times children's books are very, very short. And so it doesn't give them enough breadth and width of your writing to see whether this is a one-off or if you have more books in you or if there's more to develop here, as you said, into a series or multiple series and merchandising and things of that nature. So it is difficult, but I do find that the more books I write and the more books I publish, the more opportunities I have because, again, it makes me an established commodity.
Well, yes and no. My biggest advice to authors actually is, and okay, I know you love writing, and I know it starts with the love of expressing yourself and the ideas and all that, but you have to be realistic. The publishing, I mean, book writing and all that is a business. It's just a business, basically. And the thing that I want my authors' friends to get out of this is don't write something that you feel that you got to research what's selling, what topics sell out there, what's the hot trends, what do people relate to, what's in the look at the big five, what are the there has to be some common thread between these books, and then model yourselves after that with your own ideas, your own crafts and all that. But you have to think of it as a business. And what will make this book sell? That's the most important thing, which I wish it wasn't. That's the most dumbest thing in my book, but that is the most important thing. That's what agents will tell you, publishers, acquisition editor, they will all say the same thing. Will this book sell? That's all they care about. They don't care about what's
It has to be like a product, it has to serve a need. There
Yes.
has to be a need for that subject, that topic, that story. The same way, it's like, we talk about, independent films and, independent shows and stuff like that. And they're generally not very good because the audience is so narrow that it doesn't justify the cost involved. And this is a lot of times what you see with these books that you're talking about that don't fit in with the agents and the traditional publishers is because they don't speak to enough people. They don't fill a need for enough people to make them saleable. So I want to go ahead and move on here a little bit, and I want to know what keeps you motivated.
Oh, I love writing. I'll never not love writing. I love writing. I love my expressing ideas. I have so many ideas they're just floating around, and they have to come out. They need to come out. I have such an imagination, and I love to express myself. So it keeps me going on. And to see when I go to schools and I read my books over there, to see their eyes just open and like, oh my God, this guy wrote Geraldine. Wow, he's the guy that wrote Geraldine. They just love Geraldine. It keeps me going. The love of my books is what keeps me going. Love of children's, the children love my books. That's what keeps me going. And I just can't get enough of it. It's like a drug. So you just want to give them more and more and more. And I think it's infinite.
Right. I always feel like your job as a children's author is to bring forward the interesting thoughts and questions that spark conversation.
That's right. And that's what it does. It opens up a discussion with the author, with their parents, with their counselors. And if I see that it's affecting their life, it's affecting, that's all I care about. That's the main, most important thing. It's giving them something, a tool, basically.
Exactly. It brings forward those things that they really need somebody to kind of start the conversation. And that's a lot of
Yes.
times what children's books are, is they're just starting the conversation. So here on season two, as we've talked about, we have been focusing on reviews. So I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you to give us a review of Geraldine and the Anti-Bullying Shield.
A must read for any kid who likes to think outside the box, who has a wild imagination, who wants to learn something, who wants to experience something that they've never seen before. Highly recommend the Gizmo Girl series, Geraldine, all four books. By the way, all in a box. I sound like a commercial here, but all in a box set. So you can get all four in one. You have to just get them individually. And if you forget the names of which books, you can get all four in one. But a must read for any child in elementary school who wants to expand their horizons.
Absolutely wonderful, five stars. See, and the reason we're putting our guests on the spot here on season two is we want you, the listeners and the audience, to understand how simple it is. And if you think it's simple to review your own book that you've put your blood, sweat, and tears into, let me tell you, it's not. It's like trying to review your child. It's very difficult, but they all sail through with flying colors and they're able to do it, which is why we're doing it, to show you that it is something that can be done. It is simple. It is based on your opinion about what you think or what you read in the book. So next time you pick up a copy of the Gizmo Girl series or any of Saul's books or any books from any authors, be sure to go back and leave a review. Again, it can be as simple as I like this book or I recommend this book for someone else. So thank you for that. We also know that you have more books coming up, and can you talk to us just a little bit about what's coming up?
So we have a spin-off to Geraldine, basically called Josephine. This is a toddler board book series. This is the first of the series. It's Josephine, I Could Be, and it's about her wanting to know, what could I be when I grow up? And she goes through all the different careers and what's relevant in her life. If she sees something, she sees plants, oh, I could be a botanist. Or she sees stars, I could be an astronomer. So it's really cool. And it's for a younger group, ages 0 to 4. And it's just a spin-off to Geraldine. And the second book hopefully will come out in 2024. And it has to do with recycling, environmental. So this is for a younger a younger audience.
Okay,
Yeah.
great. So we'll have links to all of the books and all of Saul's books and where you can go and purchase those. As he said, I Could Be Josephine and the Steam Toddler Dreamers is already out now, the second book coming out in 2024. Are we going to see Geraldine again?
The fifth book of Geraldine, I can announce the title. I'm not allowed
Okay.
to talk about it. Geraldine and the Green Machine, and it has to do with recycling.
All right, awesome. Well, we'll look forward to that. Is that coming in 2024 or we're not sure yet?
We don't know. Either 2024 or 2025. We still don't know yet.
All
We're
right,
still waiting.
well, we'll definitely have to have you come back when those two books are out and available. I know that you are in schools and talking to teachers and groups. So if anyone in the audience would like to reach out to you for that, where would they do that?
Best thing is Instagram, Saul Regwan author.
Okay.
So on Instagram, I have a TikTok following as well. actually you can see I'm wearing the shirt. It's called an I think we can all relate to this. So if you contact me through that, but Instagram is the best. I would probably say Instagram.
All right. Well, we'll have that in the show notes for you. And where can they purchase your books for the Gizmo Girl series and the other books that we listed here?
Everywhere, Barnes and Noble, Amazon, they're everywhere. I've seen it everywhere.
All
So
right.
any all the websites, obviously, Target.com, you can find them everywhere.
Okay, so anywhere books are sold, so we'll go ahead and link you to the most popular ones. And you said you're on social media on Instagram. Any other platforms that they can reach out and follow you on?
TikTok.
Okay, on TikTok. You're not on Facebook or
Oh,
anything.
and of course, I'm on Facebook. I forgot about Facebook. Yes, Facebook too.
All right,
Big on Facebook.
again, we'll go ahead and link you to all of those in the show notes. Do you have any upcoming events, giveaways, blogs, newsletters, or any signups that you would like to share with the audience before we go?
Not this year, but I will have it next year for sure. Because this year, well, this year's almost over, but next year I'm going to have a lot coming up.
Okay. All right. Well, again, we thank you for being here. Was there anything else that you wanted to include before we go do our tip of the week?
Keep reading, keep for the author my author friends, keep writing, keep expressing yourselves, and think of your book as a business, and never ever give up. Even you have to build a thick skin with this industry here. No matter how many rejections you get, it means nothing. You gotta continue until you'll get that one acceptance, and that's all it takes.
Right. All right. Well, thank you, Saul. So, of course, we're going to jump over and do our tip of the week. So our tip of the week, we talked a little bit about this in the green room with Saul, and he wanted it to be the tip about querying and getting agents. Querying is something very complicated and complex. It's there are so many different ways to do that. I would say the most profitable one, or the most common one that I see, is searching for either agents or publishers who specifically are looking for the type and style of book that you've written. And then, of course, you're going to be querying them through letters with, you can look on their website. They'll have submission guidelines. They're always different. Be aware, sometimes they will trip you up in submission guidelines to see if you're paying attention or if you're just mass querying. So always go over those submission guidelines. Make sure you're following them to a T. It is a test. And if you are not finding a publisher, then again, like Saul, he's looking for a literary agent or agents who will help him get to some of the larger publishers. So again, there are many, many lists out there. Make sure that you are tracking those when you're sending that out, what you're sending it out, any kind of response you're getting, whether they're wanting you to do some changes or talk to you about other books that you might have in your list or something like that. Make sure you are tracking all of those things. But also make sure that you are taking your time and doing good work. This is the one time that you have to do your best work to get in front of an agent or a traditional publisher. So you do not want to rush this. You want to make sure that you are giving him your best work. Make sure that your query letter is well done. Make sure your bio is well done. Make sure your proposal and your query information is all correct. It is not the time when you want to rush to get it out. This is something that you want to take your time with. Again, it is your one chance in front of them, and you don't want to blow that. So make sure that you're putting your best foot forward. I want to thank Saul for being with us. I know he had to go. He is at work, so we were glad that he was able to join us today. And we want to make sure that you guys come back week after week and visit with us. We are here at the end of season two, but we will be back for season three in 2024. We hope that you stick with us and bring your friends. As always, I'm so thankful to be the host here at the Writer's Parachute, guiding author and writer dreams to a perfect landing. And we hope that you find this a safe and creative space for your dreams to land well too. Until next time, thank you very much. We'll see you again. Bye.